welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. My guest today is Stacy Rasgon, Managing Director and Senior Analyst, USA Semiconductors at Bernstein Research. Stacy is an unusual semiconductor analyst since he holds a PhD in chemical engineering from MIT. His substantial technical knowledge allows for a deep dive on Intel and other semiconductor topics that you should find refreshing and quite interesting. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Great. What a crazy year. So first, let's talk about 2021. Yeah. Uh-huh. Let's talk about 2021. 26% growth rate is quite a spike. We're really a single digit growth industry, right?
Well, who knows, right? A lot of people sort of think about semis as GDP or GDP plus, and you could think about it over the cycle. If it's mid single digit or high single digit, whatever. Now, that doesn't mean it's like that every year. And certainly it is a cyclical industry, and you do get, you get ups and downs around that long-term trend. And yes, 2021 was a big upside versus that historical trend, and you're right, we were up 25 or 26%. I'll even give you some context. If you go back, I think it was the biggest recovery year since 2010, which was the snapback after the great financial crisis. And I'll give you some numbers since then. 2010, the industry was up 30% off of 2009, where the industry fell 10 in the financial crisis. I think we hit the $300 billion mark in 2010. We were kind of flattish, plus or minus, at those levels for 5 or 6 years till about 2016. We'd probably plus or minus 10% around that number. 2017, the industry started growing again. I think memory in 2017 grew about 60%. Non-memory grew about 10. I think the industry grew over 20. Not quite as much as it did in 2021, but you grew a lot in 2017. And we blew through $400 billion for the first time that year. 2018 was another upturn, another upcycle. I think we hit $475 billion. 2019 was a downturn. The industry was down about 12%, but we were still over $400 billion. I think we did $412 billion in 2019. And then you get to 2020 and we get to COVID. And certainly when 2020 started, people expected it to be a downturn. I certainly did. Everybody did, in the wake of a potential devastating pandemic and a bunch of global shutdowns. As it turns out, 2020 was not a downturn. It ended the year up about 6%. I think we hit $440 billion. And now 2021 is just a massive snapback up, 25, 26%. We're going to blow through the $500 billion mark. We'll probably do $550 billion plus in 2021. So that gives you some context for the kind of growth. So certainly the industry is going to, I can do the math and see what that growth was from 2010 to 2021. It's probably mid to high single digits over that cycle, but certainly we've had some big swings around that trend for sure.
Yeah, the down in the 2019, it's interesting is what that means for foundries, for example. It means your utilization is down, right? You still have factories and they're still building fabs, but they were underutilized. And then in 2020, I believe in the first part of the year they were underutilized, but at the end of the year that things kind of snap back and then 2021 went full force. But unfortunately, we can't get back the underutilized fabs of 2019 and first half 2020, right? So caused some shortages.
Yeah, well, and by the way, why do we have shortages? A lot of people are blaming, they're kind of blaming the semi industry for shortages. And let's talk about the drivers. So most of it was two factors. One is that there was a whipsaw, especially in 2020 around COVID, and we had production shortfalls. And for example, the auto guys were, the automotive market has been the one that's been impacted the most from this. Part of it's their fault. They canceled their orders in 2020 in the wake of the shutdowns. And when demand came roaring back, they had to kind of go back hat in hand and they had to go to the back of the line because that capacity got backfilled by others. And that gets to the second driver is there was a surge of demand that was, in hindsight, it seems obvious, but in at the time it was unexpected. And, it was anything work from home, study from home, play from home. We had a surge of demand. And the real reason we have shortages is because nobody had expected the industry to do $550 billion this year, and the industry would have collectively had to put that capacity in place 2 or 3 years ago. Their shareholders would have shot them. They wouldn't have been allowed to do it, right? Nobody saw this coming. Right. So that's why we have shortages. There's a broader issue, though, which is this massive strong demand. We don't know how much of it is real and how much of it is not. So there's a phenomenon that happens in semis and frankly in anything. What happened with the toilet paper situation last year when people need something or companies need something and they can't get it, or it's going to take a much longer to get it. What's the natural response is to order more, right? This is the toilet paper situation writ large. And there's a metric in semis that people use called lead times. How long does it take between placing my order and getting my parts? And I mean, I'll make up the numbers, but let's say like normal lead times are, 15 weeks or whatever it is. A lot of companies right now have lead times that are 52 weeks or more. And so just very simplistically, if you're a customer, like if your lead times are 3 months, simplistically, probably won't have 3 months worth of inventory on the shelf. It takes you that long to replace it. If your lead times are a year, you want to hold more inventory. You probably want to have a year's worth of inventory on the shelf. All of a sudden, if the lead times pull back to 6 months, you may be holding more inventory than you need. And so right now, we actually don't know how much of this demand is real and how much of it is not. We actually will not know that the answer to that question until lead time starts, supply demand gets back into balance, lead times start to pull back in, and then we will see what happens. There's a broad debate in the space going on right now that's kind of called like peak cycle versus stronger for longer. The peak cycle is it's all inventory build and double ordering and overshipment, and it's going to correct. The stronger for longer is no, it's all secular. It's just strong demand and it's pricing and what have you. And I think both of them have elements that are true. Personally, I find myself a little more in the peak cycle camp because you can do some of the math. You can look at semiconductor shipments versus a wide variety of the end markets. And I actually think, even amid shortages that we're having right now, there's still plenty of evidence, I think, for overshipment and stockpiling. And so I do find myself a little more in the peak cycle camp. That doesn't mean we couldn't continue to be stronger for longer for a while, but at some point, just given how far we are above trend for a lot of the things, I worry that we do get reversion to the mean. And so we'll see where the market goes over the next like a year or two, right? Now that doesn't mean you can't be positive long term, by the way, because like coming out of COVID long term, I'm actually more positive on semis than I have in a long time. And the idea that they are pervasive and they're going into everything we need them, I think is absolutely true. You could have that be true and also be cyclically nervous in the near to medium term as well.
Yeah, so some people, say that we're going to have a big cliff, we're going to fall off because of what you said about peak. And, I personally think maybe it'll be a pause. I don't think we're going to be a cliff because I think semiconductor demand is going to continue increasing because of all the new applications and the new content we're providing. But, with the automotive guys are kind of funny because I was looking at TSMC's numbers and, in 2019, automotive was down 7%. In 2020, it was down another 7%. In 2021, it was up 51%. Right.
Let me give you some broader numbers around that, and let's pick on auto because it's one of the markets that I actually am worried about. And so, again, they've been the most impacted by shortages, as we know. You have to remember, I'll make it up, but you need 1,000 semiconductors to make a car. If you're short one part, you probably don't ship that car, right? So it's very sensitive, and they tended to run with no buffer inventory. They ran just in time, which was very efficient, but it was not resilient, and so that was a problem. But you can kind of look at auto semis. Auto semis are probably running 30 or 40% above where they were running, pre-COVID, call it 2018 or 2019. Auto production is like 20% lower because of these types of shortages. And so if you sort of do the math in terms of implied content, just like auto semis divided by auto shipments, that makes a trend line that goes up over time. So like there's a real content story that is real and valid in auto, and that's good. But if you look at where we're running, at least in Q3, which is the last quarter that I have solid data for, the implied content auto semis divided by cars is running 43% above trend, massively above trend. We are probably shipping enough. Wow. We're going to probably build like 75 million cars this year. They're probably shipping enough semis to build 100 million cars, assuming every semi was like perfectly matched. Right? Wow. It's a lot. So I get really nervous. You can look at other end markets, industrial. All the semi guys are talking about how lean their channels are. At the same time, you can go look at like the distributors like Arrow and Avnet and those kind of guys. Their inventory dollars were up 30% year over year in Q3. They were up, and they were up, I think they're probably up again in Q4. They were up, it's the second or third quarter in a row of strong double-digit sequential increases. Their channel's clearly building inventory. You can look at PCs, and again, this is actually starting to correct already. So PCs have been incredibly strong in the wake of COVID. The industry was running 250 million units, give or take. Pre-COVID, we're doing 350 million units now, which matches the prior peak, which was 2011. And if you look at something like notebook shipments from about Q4 20 through Q2 21, as strong as notebook PCs were, notebook CPUs were overshipping PCs by 30%. And that's very clear. Wow. I have very clean data on that market. That is now correcting. And Intel even admitted it on their call. They're burning notebook inventory now. That's correcting.
Well, yeah, maybe that correction is coming sooner than later.
I don't know. I will say, but this is not abnormal. This is the thing. People are acting like this is something strange. This always happens. This is what causes semi-cycles. The problem with semi-cycles is that it takes, you know, years potentially to add supply, but demand can turn on a dime. So it's just, it's very difficult to match them. It's never going to be perfectly matched. And you get this kind of psychological behavior from customers when supply and demand get out of whack, right? So it's not abnormal. The difference is we don't usually see it hit every single end market in every single geography at the same time, because we've never had something like this kicked off by a potential global catastrophe before. So that's the difference. Hey, but the behavior is not abnormal at all.
Right. So what do you think of all the CapEx that we're throwing around? I mean, yeah. TSMC is putting in a huge amount of CapEx, and Samsung and Intel, you know, it's like a CapEx war. Yeah. You know, TSMC, I understand, they have a little bit of an advantage. You know, they can get prepays. They build based on customer demand, you know, on customer orders. But Samsung and Intel, they're IDM foundries. They don't necessarily build capacity that way, right?
No. Well, I mean, they, at least for themselves, they're going to build for themselves as they see demand. Obviously, there's a lot of money sloshing around right now to build factories. So, I mean, that's a reason. At a minimum, they'll probably start, like, Intel's going to throw up a bunch of shells. Like I said, they're not idiots, right? They're not going to go, like, equip them until they need them, presumably. but we'll see.
Right.
But they're going to build a lot of shells. TI is building, obviously. And look, it sort of depends on your horizon, I think. So Texas Instruments, like, reported, you know, they had their capital management call last week. And they talked about they're going to be spending like structurally higher amounts of CapEx for a long time. TI doesn't care about what it means for this year or next year, or even 5 years from now. They're thinking 10, 15, 20 years out. And their view was like, look, if the industry is going to grow, they want to equip enough capacity to support, it's called like 7% growth. By the way, I just did the math on the industry growth from 2010 to 2021 on those numbers. It was about a 5.5% growth CAGR over that cycle. So right. Mid-single digits, right?
Right.
And TI is really saying, look, we're full right now. If you think the industry is going to go, maybe it's mid-single, maybe it's high single, like whatever over the cycle, but we're full right now. If we're going to support growth even at that levels, we need to add capacity. And so I think the industry adding capacity today, it, in some sense, is good over that long-term period. Because, again, if they'd added 3 years ago, we wouldn't be in this position right now. Although, again, like they wouldn't have been allowed to do it 3 years ago. They're being allowed to do it now. So if I'm thinking out 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, it's probably good that the industry's at. I'm going to leave the geopolitics aspect of this aside for a minute. We'll come back to that in a moment. But just to support, if you think the industry can grow, and by the way, even if it grows 5% a year, this is a $1 trillion industry in 10 years plus or minus, right? So if you think it can do that, we need the capacity over time. Now, that being said, like it does potentially increase the risk of a near-term cyclical hiccup, right? Because usually what would happen in a supply-driven cycle is exactly this. Capacity is tight. You know, there's a lot of demand, you add capacity, you bring on supply, it takes a couple of years, it usually comes online pretty much right when the business cycle is rolling over, your fabs go from full to empty and it causes problems. That risk is certainly there over the next couple of years. I mean, but that doesn't mean that like over like a 10-year period, we won't need the capacity. So it really depends on your horizon. Texas Instruments obviously is thinking long-term. I think TSMC is thinking long-term. And again, they're trying to backstop it with commitments. Intel's doing their thing. I mean, their whole strategy right now is to try to fix their process and run around begging for money. So, I mean, it's not a dumb strategy. But if you're going to beg for money, you got to show that you've got something that you want to spend it on, I guess. So they're doing that. We'll see how it goes. But I do think at some point, look, this is a cyclical industry. What are the chances that we'll have a downturn at some point? It's 100%. We will. That's just the nature of the industry. It's not bad. It just is. Right?
Yeah. I mean, we're a single-digit industry, you know, traditionally. So 26% is a huge anomaly.
Yeah, it's not unprecedented. Like I said, we saw growth like that, you know, more than that in 2010 off of an event similar to what we saw in 21. It was off an event. We saw growth like that in 2017, which was not off of an event, but it was, you know, after like 5 years of stagnation. It's not unprecedented. It happens. But yeah, do I think that like the industry is going to grow 26% a year forever? No, I don't. It's probably mid to maybe high single digits over the cycle, which, by the way, like, is fine. That gets you, like, this will be a $1 trillion industry at some point. I'm firmly convinced of that.
Yeah, it's not a bad number at all. So let's talk about Intel and AMD. They just had their calls. How do you feel about the Intel call and the AMD call?
So the Intel call, I mean, some of the worries of PCs that I've been calling out are starting to play out, at least in terms of the inventory digestion. Like I said, they actually admitted that they're starting to burn notebook inventory. Their quarter was quite good. from an objective basis, it was fine. The guide was a little light. It looked objectively on the top line a little above the street, but there was an extra week in it. If you start correcting for that extra week, it wasn't as good as it looked. And the margins are getting very bad. And look, they've been telling us margins are coming down. I don't think they're joking, right? Their CapEx is going up. Their cost to ramp these new processes are going up. A lot of the margin compression right now is as they continue to ramp their 10 nanometer process, which is finally at yields where they can manufacture it, but it's becoming increasingly that the yields are not great. They're obviously not great, right? It's never going to be the process that some of their other ones were. And I don't know, I'll be honest, but I'm having a hard time believing that 7 or 4 or whatever the hell they're calling them now, I'm having a hard time believing that those are going to be better, really, from a margin standpoint. They're going to be more capital intensive. I mean, they're going to be using EUV in a much bigger way where they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars for these tools. Margins are coming down. That tends to be not a good thing when it comes to Intel stock. In fact, it used to trade almost exclusively on expectations of gross margin expansion or contraction once upon a time. Their investments are going up, right? Because they've got to invest in the stuff and they have to pay their people. Their cash return is now non-existent. They're not buying back stock anymore. And the reason for that is they have no free cash flow because of the accelerated CapEx and the collapsing margins. I think I have them doing minus $4 million in free cash flow. I can't remember if it's this year or next year. But the cash flow is basically non-existent. And by the way, if you're owning Intel, you're not owning it for cash flow over the next year or two or year or 3 years. You're owning it, presumably, on the hope that they can fix what's wrong and actually put a bottom in place and give you a growth narrative like in the out years. They have an analyst day coming out next week where, I mean, these are the questions. Like where is the trough? Is it this year? Is it next year? Is it beyond that? Where do margins actually bottom? What does the vision look like? Like what do the economics look like as they outsource more on the one hand and start doing more foundry work on the other hand? Like, what does that actually look like? Like, nobody knows yet. Nobody knows what this company looks like in 5 years. And that's a big piece of the problem. Now, do I think that they're doing the wrong thing? No, because like what's Pat doing? He recognizes the situation that they're in, right? I mean, the problems that Intel's having did not develop over the last year. This is 10 years of sin that he's paying for, right? Literally, it's been that long that this stuff has been building. It's not going to get fixed in a year or 2 years, or maybe not even five. Like we'll see. It may take just as long to fix it. But what's his alternative? His alternative is to lie down and die, right? Maybe you turn it into IBM. You kind of do what Bob Swan was doing before. You kind of back off on the OpEx and buy back a bunch of stock and try to manufacture earnings. But that's not what Pat came in there to do. So I don't think he's doing the wrong thing. But like, why would I want to hold his hand while he's doing it? Like, call me in 5 years.
Yeah, you know, when I was watching the Intel Accelerated event and they just did an announcement for, you know, investing $1 billion in the ecosystem. You know, to me, that just says margins are going to be hit pretty bad. You know, I mean, if you're accelerating your process ramps.
Yeah, we know they promise at least the next couple of years gross margins will be in the 51-53%. Like we'll see. Like I don't know, and then we'll see what OpEx does. But I mean, I don't think they're kidding. Like margins have to come. It's entirely plausible that in the relatively near future we could have an AMD that has higher gross margins than Intel has. It's probably going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. How'd you feel about the? So you were on the AMD call as well. How'd you feel about the AMD call?
No, it was really good. I mean, like, look, they had a killer year in 2021, and we can argue about the drivers and you know, but looks like their 2022 is setting up quite well as well. I think the real bulls on that stock have like a $5 EPS number, which and ideally going beyond that, but that $5 is looking, you know, potentially credible. So we'll see. I think the only issues, if you wanted to nitpick at it, would be at least like they've got like data. By the way, the whole. Like share gain story is certainly getting fueled given the issues that Intel's having. Like Intel's had, for example, 5 quarters in a row of their cloud business and data center like down. So AMD's not having that problem. And I gotta say, like I think Pat made a mistake. You know, he kind of made this comment that you know, the AMD was finally in the rearview mirror. And I actually wrote in a note that may mean that Intel was actually driving backwards. So it doesn't look to me like AMD's in the rearview mirror just yet. My
view on that was that Intel spending a lot of time looking behind them and not in front of them.
Yeah, it's not good. I actually wish he wouldn't make comments like that. I think he should just do his thing, but okay. I think if I was going to nitpick AMD's quarter, it would be that, like, at least the guidance for the year was very strong. The upside to my existing model of time, however, was PCs and consoles. It wasn't really data center. I had a very strong data center ramp, and I think the street already did. So the upside's primarily in PCs and consoles. And so the worry with that potentially is that PCs, we just don't know how sustainable that market is right now. People are hoping right now By the way, I don't know if your listeners have any idea how PCs really, I think I said how strong they are. They were doing 250 pre-COVID. We're doing 350 million units a year right now. The collective wisdom seems to suggest that maybe they'll stay flat at this level, but like who the hell knows, right? So that's one worry for AMD, and for Intel as well, like if PCs come down. And then the other thing is like consoles are what they are. It's a good business for them, but like you don't really put a multiple on it. So that would be my only complaint. Is it's not even really a complaint, but that would be my only nitpick is that versus my prior model, the upside, which was fairly significant, is PCs and consoles. Other than that, though, like I said, they're doing really well. They're doing quite well.
Yeah. How about the TSMC call? Were you on their call?
I don't cover TSMC. My colleague in Asia covers TSMC. I think the big one, the big number there, obviously the numbers were good. And then, you know, what I was watching, again, I covered some of the semi-cap guys, was the CapEx number. The CapEx number was very strong.
You know, the other thing they said is the prepay, and their prepay has just been booming. And, that makes spending that CapEx a little bit easier.
You know, a lot of the semi companies are have these, what they call non-cancelable, non-returnable orders, right? And this is their response to the over-ordering question, because normally in this space, like there's not a lot of consequences for canceling orders. The consequence is next time I order parts, I may not get what I need, usually. So a lot of companies have put in like non-cancelable orders, and they're pointing at that as giving stability. My response to that is like, I hope so, but like in reality, if things really do hit an air pocket, we'll see how non-cancelable those orders really are. As in all things, like, you know, things are negotiable. And I mean, I guess in theory, you could force your customer to take a year's worth of parts that they don't need. You could do that. Are you going to do that? I don't know. TSMC may be a little different because like they're deploying like real dollars, right, to put this stuff in. So we'll see. The other thing with TSMC, obviously, they got other like structural things they're building. Obviously, Intel is going to be, you know, outsourcing more to them, so that's a big chunk of it. So they're probably better off, and you can argue that like longer term they're going to need the capacity anyways. But this whole question in the space of these like non-cancelable orders is going to get very interesting. As long as lead times are really long and orders are strong, it's fine.
Yeah, I think the Intel TSMC relationship is going to be a lot bigger than people might think. You know, Pat says, "Oh, we're going to build the majority of our wafers, you know, internally," and I don't think that's going to be the case because they're already buying, you know, 20% outside. And
I don't know.
3-nanometer hits.
Maybe, but they're also building a ton of fabs. Like, we'll see.
Yeah.
That's the other question, by the way. Is you know, the Intel's put out these growth numbers that on the surface sound kind of outlandish, right? So they said we think PCs are going to grow. And they said, we're going to grow double digits, although I think that was a little misunderstood. I think what they actually mean is not we're going to start from where we are right now and grow double digits from here. I think what they mean is we've got this five-year horizon, and like we're going to ramp into a double-digit growth right near the end of that window, I think is what they're more trying to say. But even that leaves a lot of questions. So I don't know. But I mean, they're certainly building out capacity for a significant amount of revenue. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
Well, you know, they had a couple shells in Arizona for quite a few years, right? I forget which fab it was. So you're right.
They built it out. I think they spent $5 billion just on the building. And they built that out. Yeah. I think they started in 2010 or 2011 when they thought PCs were still going to grow double digits. And then they mothballed it for like 5 years, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I remember I remember when Andy Bryant was talking about this at the Analyst Day, and his point was like, look, if we need the capacity, if we build the shell and then it turns out we don't need it, right? The actual like cash costs, it's just the holding cost of that. It's nothing, right?
Exactly.
Assuming we can eventually use it versus what if we need it and didn't build it? Then we lose out on the operating profit of full fab for like years. It's like billions and billions of dollars.
Right.
So at least to build out the shell and then mothball, like fine. Like I think Pat's even been going around with, and he's right, saying he wants shells, right? He'd love to have a spare shell or two or three or whatever it is, right? Sure.
Yep.
So I don't blame
him. Just don't call them fabs until they have equipment in them, right? Because now they're
okay,
just
yeah, whatever. Happens. Sure. You know, the terminology is a little loose. I mean, he's talking about doing 5 nodes in 4 years. Like, no, he's not. He's going to do 5 transitions in 4 years, right? He's taking a page out of TSMC's playbook, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they used to call them pluses, right? So 14 plus plus
yeah,
plus
exactly,
plus.
Yeah, exactly. It's not unusual versus what they were doing.
Nothing.
We may have talked before about my view on like the node nomenclature. It's all marketing. The numbers don't actually mean anything anymore. Right?
Exactly.
It's marketing.
Exactly.
And they were being pedantic about it and saying, oh, you know, ours are a real node and theirs are not. They weren't getting anything. They finally just gave up, right?
I suggested I kept beating on that. Just follow the crowd, you know.
You might as well. Like,
it's a lot easier.
I'm not blaming them for that. I mean, like, fine. Like, they weren't winning by being pedantic about it, so like, fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like TSMC named their 16 nanometers and Samsung named their 14, and TSMC named it 16 because it wasn't as dense as Intel's 14, right? They were being respectful.
Remember, they were doing 20, which was planar transistors. They took the planar transistors, replaced them with FinFETs, and called it 16. There was no shrink.
Unfortunately, they had to explain the difference. But, you know, the density was similar to the between TSMC 16 and Samsung 14 was pretty much the same. And so TSMC guys had to sit there and explain why they called it 16. And you know, they finally said, why are we doing this? Let's just play the game. We'll call it the same. And that's what Intel's doing.
Intel would put up these charts, and Intel had another factor. Intel used to leave the time factor, so they'd say, "Oh, you know, our 7 nanometer is better than TSMC's, you know, 10, or our 10 is better than TSMC's 7, right?" And they were saying, conveniently ignoring the fact that TSMC 7 had been available for like a year, and Intel's 10 at that point was vaporware, right? I mean, give me a break. And I always say, customers are not stupid. Customers don't buy little envelopes full of transistors, right? They buy chips that do what they want them to do at a power, performance, and price that it's acceptable, that are available when they need them. That's what they buy.
Yeah. You know what? As a semiconductor designer, we don't even look at the names. You know, we look at the PDKs, and the PDK tells you what process the node it is, tells you what density you're going to get.
The names are like, for people like me.
Right.
That's what they're for. It's marketing.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, well, I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you want to sum up here?
No, and I think this is good. Like I said, I'm happy to come back anytime. There's so much to talk about these days. Like it's not slowing down. I love this space. Like it's a ground zero for everything. it's a wonderful place to be right now. So.
Well, how long have you been doing this space?
Well, so I've been on Wall Street doing this for 14 years. Before this, I did management consulting. I was actually at McKinsey for 3 years, and I spent 100% of my time in their semiconductor practice doing strategy consulting for semi companies. And then before that, I was at MIT and at IBM Research. So I've probably spent 20 plus years in the industry across sort of academia, consulting, and now Wall Street. But the Wall Street gig has been about 14 years.
Yeah, you know, this is my 40th year, and I don't know of another time that was more exciting than it is now, you know, over the last 2 years. I mean,
hugely
exciting.
I even did a piece in 2015. Remember I told you had that stagnation period for 5 or 6 years and the industry didn't really grow? I wrote a big piece in 2015. It was called Playbook for a Maturing Industry. And the idea was, it looks like we've gone X growth, and we're going to have more M&A and this and that. And like all of a sudden, like it's a growth industry again. So it's more fun to be in a growth industry, I got to say.
Yeah, if you look at venture capital, we had a record amount of venture capital coming in the semiconductor industry last year. And that also lends itself to a little bit of boom and bust. And I don't know if you follow the EDA guys, but the EDA guys have been enjoying huge gains, right?
Oh, sure.
17%, you know. And EDA is a single digit industry, you know, even worse than semiconductors.
Well, you got a lot more leading edge designs now, right? So I mean, it's driving us.
Right.
Even on the VC side, it was funny. I was doing some work. It must have been 5, 6 years ago. We were looking at the, and I shelved it because at that point there was no VC investment. It was almost all corporate. This is maybe it was a longer than that. It was before the big AI. But there are actually like real business cases now for VC investment, and importantly, there are exit opportunities. But the problem with VC and semis, I mean, it can cost you $100 million to deliver your product. And so that's tougher to justify. But these days, like there are actually like real business cases and exit opportunities. So we've seen a massive pickup, I think, on the VC side over the last several years.
Yeah.
But you go back, I don't know, 10 years, five, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago, there was almost none. It was almost all, it was like, you know, Intel Capital and a lot of these corporates have their own VC, was the bulk of it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what's going to happen. We'll touch base with you again in about 6 months.
I'm happy to come on.
But it's going to be another big year, another exciting year for sure.
I think so. Like one way or the other, like whatever happens, like exciting is probably going to be a word to describe it. So.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay. You bet. Take care. Bye.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.